Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day 6 of Wimbledon 2017. We're brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. I'm Catherine Whittaker. I'm joined once again by David Law. We're both members of the BBC Radio 5 Live team for Wimbledon this year, and it's been a great week already. What has happened on day 6 of Wimbledon? Well, there haven't actually been any major upsets, but there have threatened to be all sorts of major upsets.
That's been true.
One of those, there's been loads and loads of drama, but the results haven't been dramatic.
And you were on one of them, weren't you? I mean, one of the biggest ones, top seed Angelique Kerber, looked like she was on her way.
I don't know how she came through that, I really don't. She was playing Shelby Rogers, who has form taking out big seed. She took out Simona Halep at the Australian Open earlier this year. A couple of years ago, she reached the quarterfinals of the French. She's a very sort of cool, calm, collected person, but I think being in a winning position against the world number one did get to her in a way that some other things haven't before. She was set and 4-2 up, and as Jonathan Overton threw to me for coverage of it on 5 Live, he drew a comparison with Andy Murray last night, her male counterpart, world number one, in a struggle. And I said, I don't think she can find the fight in her that took Andy Murray over the line last night, the will, the fight that we spoke about on last night's podcast. I don't think Angelique Kerber has that in her, and somehow she found it. I still don't think it was Andy Murray like. I still, Jeff Tarango alongside me in commentary talked about Dr. Jekyll and Miss Hyde, Dr. Kerber and Miss Hyde. He said, you know, there's 10% of her that wants to lose. He actually said more than 10%. I'm just watering down what he said.
I don't believe that.
I do. Not necessarily on every point. And I think the wanting to win part is dominant, which is why she won today, or she wouldn't have done. But yeah, there's a part of her, I've seen it over the last few months, that there's relief when she loses. It's not the only emotion. There's disappointment as well, but there is, without question, an element of relief when she loses. But she did fight today. She won, and she was delighted to win. And I do believe that things can change, you know. Things can change over the course of a tournament. She can play herself into form. The problem for her is she plays Garbiñe Muguruza next on
Monday.
Who's
playing well.
Who's playing really well and still hasn't had any kind of outing on centre court number one. She's been really shunned at this tournament, Garbiñe Muguruza. And surely Kerber Muguruza will be a centre court match on Monday. The order of play, which isn't out yet, so we can only speculate.
Do you think it
will
really
be speculated about?
I don't think it will be.
I don't either. I think it should be.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not sure about that. I think maybe
the world number one against the finalist of 2 years ago, the informed player, the much talked about, that has to be a centre court match.
I think if it's going to be two women's matches and one men's match, then yes. But I think I would still be putting Konta on centre court.
It will be, but it doesn't have to be. Mm. Simon Briggs has arrived. Hello, Simon.
Hello. I hear you're discussing Angelique Kerber.
We are. Yeah, we were impressed with the fight back. I tell you, look, I see the point about the relief that when, and but I don't think it's that she wants to lose. I think that it is
not
that,
once.
No, but I think there is, and I can see the point about the relief because she's struggling so much with getting it all together. It's not going well, and at least when the match has been over this year, she hasn't got to worry about it anymore. It's just happened. But I think she, I think she is a heck of a fighter ordinarily. Look at what she did last year, the number of times she came back.
Yeah, but she's not the... Absolutely, absolutely. Fundamentally, she is. But there's something about her this year that isn't the same Angelique Kerber as last year. She can find it again, absolutely. But there's a resignation about her when there isn't the defiance. You know, yeah. We talked about it with Novak Djokovic.
More Djokovic-like.
You know,
where, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Where's the defiance that we're so used to seeing?
No,
too often, when she sprays something wide or long or double faults, it's a shrug.
So this could be a big moment.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. I don't feel any confidence that it will be, but it absolutely could be.
Yeah. What's Simon Briggs been watching?
Mostly Novak. So also just looking at the lady singles draw, I'm trying to work out what the best matches are. I mean, wouldn't you think that for the purposes of the public, Van der Wey Wozniacki is quite juicy?
I think they're all pretty juicy. I think that's the issue. And I think Konta will be put on centre court on Monday. I think there's a strong argument for that. The club seems to defend its decisions on the basis of market forces, giving the people what they want, putting on centre court the things that people, they think, are most interested in. My issue with that is it's a self-fulfilling situation. You put Federer on court, centre court, people are going to be most interested in him. You know, people could be... But look, okay, Federer is a bad example.
Bad example.
Put Ostapenko on centre court, people will get interested in her. People won't...
The
average tennis-watching punter at home won't see the order of play and go, ooh, Yelena Ostapenko. Put her on centre court, people will start getting interested in her.
I definitely think it's a fair point that if the view is, well... People want to watch the men's matches more, don't they? But if you stick them on, of course they're going to watch them. If you were to stick the women's matches on and say, actually, you know, we believe that this should just be equally done.
It's a microcosm of the wider issue, which is all these people go, oh, well, you know, women don't get equal prize money because of market forces. And, you know, but that doesn't account for the world and the way society is structured and the way the world is. And I'm going off on one and I'll stop. But, you know, it's a self-perpetuating situation. You have to want to change it in order to change it.
But it's not just about men and women, is it? It's about the big four against what used to be in the women's game, the big two. I mean, there were six players who had instant international recognition.
Venus Williams has instant international recognition. She's a five-time champion. She hasn't been on centre court once this tournament.
Yeah, Venus Williams is she's quite a complicated... how she fits into things, because a lot of people have look at her age and think that she's not a contender. But
well, people thought that about Federer for a number of years.
I think the other thing is, if you were to go back 20 years, I think the same situation was probably happening when actually, if you looked at the women's names, there a lot of them were bigger names than
definitely.
Carlos Moyer and Marcela Rios and Yevgeny Kafelnikov, etc. However, today's tennis, can we talk about that first?
Yes, let's. We've covered Angelique Kerber, but there are a couple of other... particularly on the women's side, top seeds that looked like they were in massive, massive trouble and ended up fighting through Agnieszka Radwanska on centre court against Tomea Baczynski. I don't know. I was listening to the radio commentary. I wasn't watching it in person. So I heard that Baczynski had a physical issue, but I don't know how much of a factor that was in the final set, which was very one-sided in favour of Radwanska. And similarly, Caroline Wozniacki fighting through against Annette Kontaveit, who's somebody that I really, really rate Annette Kontaveit. Yes, she fell away and the nerves got the better of her today against the fifth seed. And I think she served for it twice, actually, in that second set. And then it ended up being, similarly to Radwanska, a very, very one-sided third. But, yeah, it's all about the seeds averting disaster today on the women's side.
Well, and it's about Magdalena Rybarikova. Did she drop three games? No more than that.
A very valid point.
Didn't you tip her for the title? Did I tip her?
You tipped her.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. just 24 short hours ago.
No, I just said that, you know, it's that weird out there. It feels that unpredictable that she could go a long way, but that was a pretty awesome result.
Well, Coco Vandeweghe, who I picked at the start of the tournament to be in the final, quite pleased about that at the moment.
Yeah, that was a pretty awesome result as well, wasn't it, Coco Vandeweghe?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen her this season apart from the match she played against Konta in Birmingham, where she was just I mean, making Konta look like she was a sort of medium pacer in cricket terms, making her look like she was underpowered. And there's not many people who can do that. So Wozniacki against Coco will be the ultimate contrast of styles, won't it? And I'm not fancying Wozniacki in that one.
So many. I mean, these women's last 16 matches to me are just glorious. Halep, Azarenka. Azarenka, you're tipping for the title, so presumably tipping to beat Halep?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you just think that she's going to have too much weight of stroke.
I'm not thinking that. I think Halep wins that.
Oh, I think so too, actually. Not by much. I don't feel confident about it, but I think people underestimate Halep on grass. She has reached a semi-final here.
She
knows what she's doing.
People underestimate how long Victoria Azarenka has been out of the game. She's been out of the game for a year.
Says the guy who tipped Petra Kvitova to win here, but yeah.
Halep is a better version
He's
of...
He's just giving me that look.
Halep is a better version of Heather Watson,
well,
who...
That's good for Azarenka then, isn't it?
...very nearly beat Victoria Azarenka. I personally feel that will be a win for Halep. But we shall see.
Konta Garcia.
Yeah, I'm liking Konta in that one. We spoke to the coach, Wim Fissette, today. Can't actually describe that because... through the kind of machinations of newspaper media, we're not going to run that in the paper until tomorrow night. So, got to keep.
Can you tease anything?
Keep my hat on that one. But
make people read.
But he was, you know, quite interesting and pretty upbeat and
give quite one line, Simon.
I can't because it's a shared property of our colleagues. But just the mood around.
But it's
around
coming,
that team.
Folks. It's coming.
Okay, so that'll be in the paper tomorrow, Sunday.
No,
Monday.
I could talk about it if it was in the paper tomorrow, Sunday, but it's Monday's paper.
Okay, I'm just getting confused with my days. Monday's paper, but online probably tomorrow night.
Yeah, because we basically get the day off, everybody, tomorrow, because it's middle Sunday, which we love.
Svitolina Ostapenko. Svitolina, who's no one's talked about. She came in here with a foot injury. She had an awful first round draw in Ash Barty. I picked her to lose first round, and here she is in the round of 16, taking on... the glorious, unpredictable pocket rocket that is French Open champion Yelena Ostapenko.
That is uncallable. I mean, it's not even worth attempting to make a prediction on that one, is it?
I agree, but I'm going to make you anyway.
You might as well...
One of you or David can make a prediction. David is pointing towards Simon, and Simon is pointing towards David.
I think Ostapenko will win, personally.
I do too.
No idea. I'll go Svitolina for variety.
We've learned not to pick Ostapenko to lose things, haven't we?
No, well, I mean...
She's on a 10-match winning streak.
She's going to win everything.
I mean. Yeah. Venus Williams against Anna Konyu.
Yes, that is an interesting one because Konyu is an explosive talent. I remember seeing her thrash Radvanska, I think, at the US Open last year. Croatian player, former US Open junior champion. But I saw Venus Williams... in her previous match, and she looked right on it again. I think she's
played herself into something.
And also, the news overnight coming that she is not, or she's been found not to be at fault for the road accident that very sadly led to a fatality earlier, well, last month.
I wonder how many of these women in the last 16 are actually probably hitting harder than the men in terms of MPH.
A few of them. I'm looking at Vandeweghe for one.
Vandeweghe, Venus, Ostapenko, and Konja, probably.
Anna Konyu, by the way, one of my abiding memories of her is us recording one of our podcasts live last year, probably on a similar day, I think it was second or third round, and her being wheeled past us in a wheelchair after her match against Agnieszka Radwanska. She suffered I think it was her ankle that she turned midway through the match. I mean, it was she played on for a couple of points long enough to lose the match, but there were similarities, although albeit not quite as extreme, to Bethany Mattek-Sands this year in terms of how extreme and how obviously extreme the injury was from the get-go. And I so vividly remember we were standing in exactly the same position we are now, and she was wheeled past us in sobs of tears in a wheelchair. And I'm delighted for her that she's back and she's kind of making up for what happened last year. I do think she's going to lose to Venus Williams, though. Sorry. In the top half of the draw, my draw is loading, so help me out here a bit, David. It's the matches we've had today, so it is Kerber against Muguruza.
Yeah, Kerber against Muguruza.
We've discussed where it'll be. We haven't discussed
I think I'd probably go for Muguruza to win that, personally.
I think so too. Radvanska Kuznetsova, Simon?
Kuznetsova, I'm still thinking Radvanska's not in form at all this year. And she got a helping hand because I did see in the medical timeout that Baczynski took, and it did look pretty nasty. So I'm not fancying Ravanska for that one.
Rabarakova Martic.
That's pretty hard to call as well, but I might as well go Rabarakova since I've obviously talked her up.
Martic won very convincingly today. I know it was against Zarina Diaz, but she was very convincing. Coco Vandeweghe against Caroline Wozniacki is our last women's round of 16 match to call. Where are we with that?
Definitely Coco, but you know, easily, I think.
Oh, I'm not sure easily, but I definitely think Coco Vandeweghe will win.
I think Vandeweghe as well. She was on 5 Live earlier today talking very candidly about her coaching relationship with Pat Cash and how incredibly fired up he is about it.
Well, I mean, he is fired up. We've just done the Roger Federer match with him in the commentary box, but very interesting to hear him talk about it when we asked him, you know, so how about her chances here? And he goes, I don't care. I really don't. I'm not interested in what her chances might be. I'm only interested in improving her as a tennis player. And it really is as simple as one point at a time. He said, I know that's boring, but that's what it takes for her to become a better tennis player.
Well, she said exactly that in her interview on 5 Live, and Jonathan Overend wasn't having any of it. He said, that's boring, Coco. Give us something else. And she said exactly that. She said, I'm sorry. She said, I would be inclined to give you something more interesting, but it's my coach, Pat Cash, that is giving me that line. So I can't go against his word.
I think it's a delicious combination, those two, because I think both of them are pretty anti-establishment characters. And I think as a meeting of minds, I really like the idea of it. I think they're going to have great success.
This continues to gather momentum, doesn't it? I mean, I was in the interview room with Ernest Gulbis, and one of the questions from an esteemed colleague was, I've heard Marat Safin wants to get back into coaching. What about him? For you, Ernest. I remember you discussing Marat Safin with a hell will freeze over tone when we were back on who will coach Novak.
Who should Marat Safin coach? Who should make the call to Marat Safin?
Ooh. At Tennis Podcast, well, do let us know.
Any one
of
Andy Murray's opponents in the first four rounds, isn't it? The Benoit Paire, Dustin Brown, Sasha Bublik.
Or is it that he should coach? Or should he coach somebody completely different to him, like you know the McEnroe-Raonic combination? Should he coach someone who needs a bit of the Marat Safin brought out in them?
Kyle Edmund.
Well, yeah, somebody like Dominic Thiem, Kyle Edmund, Milos Raonic.
When Mats Wilander coached Marat Safin,
that was
an interesting combination.
It was a brief combination.
It was not a very successful one.
So you've mentioned Novak Djokovic against Ernest Gulbis. What did we make of that match? It didn't quite live up to expectations in terms of the quality and competitiveness of the match. Djokovic, I thought, was good. Gulbis, I thought, was a bit disappointing relative to expectations.
Absolutely, yeah, that's bang on. He started out with a flurry of winners, and I chatted to him afterwards, and he put himself off because he was playing too well at the start, he said, because he never actually started rallying. And then when he tried to play percentage tennis, he kind of couldn't get it together, and the second set just went in a blink.
Well, that's an insight into the mindset and sort of the flakiness of Ernest Gulbis, isn't it? That, I don't know, he didn't feel that he could just keep doing what he was doing and that would be enough. Is that sort of like he doubted himself and thought, I mean, Ernest Gulbis playing percentage tennis, is that the route to victory over Novak Djokovic? I'm not sure.
Well, he hasn't got the backing in terms of matches, and particularly, and when you look at him, I don't think his mental game is his problem. I think his problem is his forehand, you know, which has been rebuilt, you know, so many times, and
particularly recently, it's definitely different technically to how it was prior to these recent injuries. You seem unimpressed by the remodeled version.
Well, there is more. I think the BBC claimed, I don't know if he said this anywhere, I didn't hear it, I didn't get a chance to ask him myself, but BBC claimed that he'd changed it because the players were all laughing at it.
Well, that's what we reported last night.
I think the BBC took that from our conversation.
I think they did, you know. Yeah. Which we took from an interview at the ATP World Tour. website did with him.
Which is now in the Telegraph tomorrow. So.
Everybody's stealing everybody's line. Brilliant.
So that was Djokovic.
A bit like when Catherine decided to start the rumour about Goran Ivanisevic coaching Novak Djokovic.
And then I saw that rumour being perpetuated on Twitter, and then I re-reported the rumour on Eurosport, and I was like, there are rumours that Goran's going to coach Djokovic.
Proper
and I didn't realise that I was just reporting my own rumours. But I still think Goran is sitting by the phone waiting for the call. I think he will have been annoyed that Mario Ancic is in that coaching team.
I'm going to ask him on Monday.
Please do. Don't you think?
Definitely, but I still think that this is insider trading, isn't it, on the rumour front?
It is. We accept that and we move on. David, you were commentating on Roger Federer against Misha Zverev. A good match, yeah, but one you ever thought Misha Zverev was going to win.
There was one small moment when it was 4-2 first set for Federer and Zverev broke back and actually had, I think, break point at 5-all. And you thought, maybe Roger might lose his rhythm here or something. He immediately served an ace. And Pat Cash just said, that was so inevitable. And I thought, you know what, that's right, really. And he got his way through the first set tiebreak, and thereafter, you know, although I feel that Roger Federer should not be on centre court every day of every round of the tournament, I think it is wrong. That is my personal opinion, that is not what should be happening. I think there should be some equality between those top players. They should all take their place on court number one at some point. Tonight, watching Federer putting on a show, because in that third set he went into exhibition mode, and it was incredible to watch and to be present there. And in the penultimate point of the match, you could see the crowd almost wanting to start the standing ovation before he'd even finished. And when he finally hit the winning shot, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a crowd, and it wasn't sort of with ecstasy at Andy Murray pulling off a last minute win. It was like a theatre audience just rising as one to appreciate what they've just seen. There is nothing else quite like it in this sport.
Well, that's why it's a tough call to put him on anything other than centre, because if you bought the best tickets and you don't get to see him, you feel robbed.
Well, too bad is what I was saying.
Again, a self-perpetuating situation because of the frequency with which he's been put on centre court over the last few years. If he's then not put on centre, you take it for granted. You've got centre court tickets on Monday. You take it for granted you're going to see Roger Federer and Andy Murray.
It's not the Roger Federer Open, Simon.
I actually disagree. I look at it as the matchups. I don't see it as it's Roger Federer, regardless of who he's playing. He's on centre court. I think Federer-Dimitrov, as a match, should be on centre court. I think Federer should have been put out on court one before now. And I think, provided he makes it through on Monday, his quarter-final would be against... I do know this because I did my predictions, and I think my predictions are coming to fruition in that quarter, and I did look this up earlier.
Is it Team or Burdick?
Team or Burdick. No, I think they're in Djokovic's bit, aren't they?
I don't know.
So whoever else is in that bit. But I think stick Federer Dimitrov on centre court on Monday. I know you're pointing. I'm just going to finish my point very quickly. It's time for Simon. And then stick Federer on court one for his quarterfinal on Wednesday. I agree with you. He shouldn't arbitrarily, no matter what, be put on centre. But that match should be.
There's something about tennis, specifically out of all the sports, is that they do have, it does have a link with the performing arts. And if anyone out there likes a good book about tennis, they should read Love Game by Elizabeth Wilson, who's a fantastic social cultural theorist. She talks about how for a lot of people it's closer to a visit to Glyndebourne than it is to going to a football match, which is one reason why a lot of people's allegiances are not with their own nationality of players, but with the players who they find most satisfying aesthetically, which in some ways makes the British paper's obsession with Murray and Konta somewhat laughable. But anyway, as we move on, that tension also applies to the whole thing about, you know, appearance fees, wild cards, all those questions. Tennis is not a pure sport in the sense of it is just a kind of churning machine for competition. There is more to it. So it has an internal complexity where these debates will continue to come up.
It's like David Foster Wallace's incredible piece about Roger Federer's religious experience. I'm using that to sort of argue against myself. I don't believe he should just, no matter what, be put on centre court. But
what about Andy Murray?
No.
He's been on centre court every match.
Murray against Pear, very validly could be put on court number one. Very, very validly. They won't, but
might
they
do.
Possibly should.
Yeah, I feel a lot less strongly about Murray being put on court one. All I'm saying is if you put Federer on court one, people who have centre court tickets will be extremely upset. I'm not sure that they will feel the same way about Murray.
Very interesting.
Interesting, that is interesting.
Good, it's so interesting. There's so many matches, so many possibilities, and we don't know what the order of play is.
And there are others as well. There's Nadal Muller. I don't think Nadal is even in the conversation to get on centre court on Monday. Extraordinarily.
Somebody could end up on court two,
could be really interesting.
Well, he's the best player in the tournament so far, isn't he? Without any doubt. He's been clear head and shoulders above everybody else. And yeah, Muller also is a good test for him. It's going to be short and sharp, and it's going to call his return into, you know, it's going to test his return. But I'm still expecting Rafa to come through that without being taken to a fourth set.
Who's going to win the title, based on what you've seen?
Well, I mean, Rafa's the best, but I think I said yesterday, because Roger did peak late at the Australian Open, I'm still leaving him improvement room. And when he came into the press, we talked about his head cold and how he's feeling at least 50% better than he was 2 days ago. And I think that might have just taken a little bit of shine off his first couple of performances.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Can I settle all the arguments because the order of play is out?
Yes, you can.
Da, da, da. I'm going to read it out, okay? And I'm going to report on the reactions of David Law and Simon Briggs as I read it. First up, centre court, Anna Konyu, Venus Williams.
Wow, I am surprised.
I'm pleasantly surprised. She's earned it. Second up, Andy Murray against Benoit Paire. Is anyone surprised?
No, not really.
Third up, Roger Federer, Grigor Dimitrov. Given that, what do we think is on court one?
Can I report first and foremost
that there's also only one women's match on court one. Yeah. So that's four men's and two women's across the two main show courts. I'll let my tone of voice do the speaking there.
But if the big four had not all been here, it wouldn't be the case. I mean, it's not...
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely not. It would not be the case. They put Wozniacki, Vandeweghe ahead of team...
So market forces
maybe.
Are more important
just,
than
I
equality.
I just think equality for equality's sake... is valuable.
It's not just a gender issue, it's a big four issue, who are a very specific phenomenon in sport.
But it's a market forces issue ultimately.
Market forces is a self-perpetuating thing. The market is set by society.
The big four's prominence is not purely a gender issue. I mean, they are...
You can't eliminate gender from it.
If Serena Williams was here, what would be happening then?
Yeah, she'd be on the show course.
And Venus Williams would be...
Yeah, Venus Williams would be
She'd be on number one.
She'd be on court number two because there's nowhere they're putting Joe Konta on court number one.
The point is, though, Simon, would there be three women's matches then on those two main show courts or not?
Well, you're saying that the Big Four still playing?
Yeah.
If one of the Big Four goes out, if one of the Big Four is injured, and they have, and isn't it the first time that all Big Four are playing on Monday since 2011?
You say Big Four, and I know this is devil's advocate. Look, I know Djokovic has big, big fans here. I'm not questioning that. I'm saying if we're looking at purely market forces, you think Djokovic against Mannarino is a bigger draw, a bigger crowd pleaser than Kerber Muguruza, simply because Djokovic is a member of the Big Four? I don't.
I'm saying it's a concept that everyone in tennis is kind of locked into, the Big Four, and they've created this, and it's not because they're men. If they had been for women with 46 slams, I think, then they would be dominating the conversation on the show courts.
I wonder whether it is also part of the five-set versus three-set element and the length of entertainment,
again,
inverted commas. I'm just speculating.
You can't do right for doing wrong, women's tennis. You can't win. Let them play five.
Wow.
They were not allowed to play five because of market forces, and they're not allowed to be on a show court.
What else?
Because they don't play five because of market forces. Kerber Muguruza, the world number one against the finalists of 2 years ago, court number one. Court number two. Azarenka Halep, court number two. Raonic Zverev, court number two.
Sorry, what was it?
Zverev, who I saw hit a trick shot on match point today.
Awesome.
Against Sebastian Offner of Austria. Zverev looked irritated that the world number 217, who I was very impressed by the way, was even winning points against him. He looked irritated.
Just to confirm, so which one of the men's matches is first on court one? Is it Nadal or Djokovic?
First on court one, Konta, and then Nadal, and then Djokovic.
Okay, thank
court
you.
Court two, Kerber Muguruza, Azarenka Halep, Raonic Zverev. Court number three, which I should remind people is accessible to grounds pass holders, Radvanska Kuznetsova, Van der Wey Wozniacki, and then Team Burdick. And then court 12 features the French Open champion Yelena Ostapenko versus Elena Svitolina, Batista Ragut, Cilic, court 18, Rybarikova, Martic, Query, who we haven't even mentioned, who won one game today against Joe Wilfred Tsonga, against Kevin Anderson, the comeback kid, and then I think that's it for singles matches. There's doubles as well. I'm glad we got that order of play in before the end of the podcast. I'm going to wrap up because David has given me the wrap-up sign. Simple as that. Simon, thank you very much. 2 days in a row for Simon Briggs on the Tennis Podcast. We are very lucky. David Law, thank you. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and we will be back on Manic Monday.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.